Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're looking at a legal case with some, well, serious lessons about what happens when you ignore a lawsuit. Franklin Credit Management Court v. Neflin.
That's right.
We've got a stack of materials here, a detailed breakdown aimed at law students, an overview, a legal brief. And our mission is really to pull out the crucial insights for you.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it as a cautionary tale about a missed procedural step that led to a very, very expensive outcome.
Exactly. We're diving into how a dispute over a mortgage settlement ballooned into a huge judgment simply because, well, one party didn't respond to the second lawsuit.
Mm.
It highlights that in the legal world, sometimes the biggest defeats aren't about the facts. You know, they're about failing to play by the rules of the game.
So let's set the stage. Back in the late 90s, Fred Neflin had a mortgage with Bank One. His payments were around, what, $1,060 a month after a modification? Pretty straightforward stuff, right?
It was, yeah. Pretty standard. But then you fast forward to 2004, and Franklin Credit Management takes over servicing the loan. And suddenly, they're demanding about $300 more a month, $385.51, and even reporting Neflin as delinquent. You can imagine that didn't sit well.
No, not at all. And that's what kicked off the first lawsuit, which eventually led to a settlement in 2008. What were the key promises Franklin made in that agreement to sort of make things right?
Well, this settlement was really meant to fix everything. Franklin agreed, number one, to remove the requirement for flood insurance. That was Section 7.
Okay.
Then Section 8, waive any escrow payments. And crucially, fix the errors on Neflin's credit reports. Three key points aimed at putting things back on track.
Sounds reasonable. You know, problem identified, solution agreed upon. But here's where things go sideways, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't exactly a happily ever after.
Not even close. I mean, what's astonishing is how quickly Franklin seemed to just disregard the ink on that settlement agreement.
Right.
Within weeks, they reimposed the flood insurance, yeah, hitting Neflin with a bill for over $3,300.
Oh.
They also started demanding monthly escrow payments, north of $700, directly contradicting the waiver they just agreed to.
Mm.
And those credit report errors, still there, unfixed.
You just have to wonder what they were thinking. To breach a settlement that quickly and on, like, multiple fronts, it's almost unbelievable.
It really is.
So understandably, Neflin lawyered up again, leading to the second lawsuit in 2010. What exactly did he accuse Franklin of this time around?
So this second complaint was broader. It included, obviously, breach of contract for violating the settlement term.
Naturally.
But also defamation because of the continued false credit reporting and violations of the Maryland Consumer Debt Collection Act, MCDCA, and the Maryland Consumer Protection Act, MCPA.
So not just breaking a promise, but causing actual harm.
Exactly. They weren't just saying Franklin broke their promise. They were alleging harm to Neflin's reputation and unfair debt collection practices.
Okay, so Franklin had been down this road before, agreed to a fix, and then basically doubled down on the same behavior. You'd think they'd be extra careful this time. But this is where the real jaw dropper comes in. The default judgment. What happened? Why didn't Franklin respond?
That is the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the sources don't give us a clear answer as to why. Maybe it slipped through the cracks. Maybe it was negligence. Who knows?
Hmm.
But the crucial fact is they simply failed to file any response to Neflin's 2010 complaint within the required time frame. And in the legal world, ignoring a lawsuit is, well, it's about the worst thing you can do.
Right.
It led straight to the court entering a default judgment against them.
Okay, for anyone listening who isn't deep into legal procedure, what does a default judgment actually mean in a situation like this? What's the immediate impact on Franklin?
Think of it like this. In the eyes of the court, by not responding, Franklin essentially conceded that Neflin's claims were valid. Full stop. Yep. They lost their chance to argue they didn't breach the settlement or that the credit reporting wasn't defamatory or that they didn't violate consumer protection laws. All those arguments, gone.
So the court just skips the whole liability part.
Pretty much. The court moves straight to figuring out how much Franklin owed Neflin because liability was no longer in dispute. Silence, in this legal context, equaled surrender on the issue of liability.
So they were completely shut out from even arguing their side of the story on whether they did anything wrong. That seems incredibly harsh.
It does sound severe, but it's a fundamental principle, you know?
Yeah.
The system needs rules for resolving disputes, and failing to participate has serious consequences. That's a key insight for any lawyer or law student.
And the consequences for Franklin were pretty significant financially, weren't they? Can you break down the damages awarded to Neflin?
Absolutely. The circuit court ordered Franklin to pay Neflin over $203,000.
Mm.
Now, this included the direct costs of the breach, that $3,301.84 for the flood insurance and the escrow stuff.
Okay, the direct damages.
Right. But the bulk of the award, the really big numbers, came from $100,000 for defamation. And this was specifically because in Maryland, false credit reporting is considered slander per se.
Slander per se. Okay, I'll unpack that a bit. So Neflin didn't have to prove specific financial harm from the bad credit report. The harm is just assumed.
Exactly right. Maryland law recognizes that a false hit to someone's creditworthiness is inherently damaging to their reputation. It just is.
Right.
So once the default established that the reporting was indeed false, the court didn't require Neflin to show, you know, I couldn't get this loan because of it, or my interest rate went up. The damage was presumed.
Interesting. And the other big chunk.
Then another $100,000 was awarded for the MCDCA and MCPA violations. This likely recognized the emotional distress and the general difficulties Neflin faced due to Franklin's unfair collection practices. And on top of all that, Franklin had to cover Neflin's attorney's fees and other legal costs.
Ouch. Yeah, that's a hefty price to pay for not filing an answer to a complaint. But surely Franklin didn't just accept this massive judgment laying down. What did they try to do after the fact?
No, they did try to push back. They filed something called a motion to alter or amend the judgment.
Okay.
Their arguments were basically trying to relitigate liability. They argued they didn't act with malice in the defamation claim, which, as we discussed, isn't required for slander per se anyway.
Right.
And they tried to argue that simply breaching a settlement agreement shouldn't be considered debt collection under the MCDCA and MCPA. They were trying to argue the merits after they'd already lost by default.
And how did the court react to these belated arguments?
The circuit court was having none of it. The judge was very clear. Those arguments came too late.
Mm-hmm.
The judge reiterated that the default judgment meant Franklin had already been found liable, period.
So the post-judgment motion could only challenge?
It could only address the amount of damages, perhaps argue that the $100,000 figures were too high based on the evidence presented at the damages hearing, but it couldn't touch the underlying question of whether they were liable in the first place. They had totally missed their window to contest the core claims.
So the initial failure to respond was truly the fatal blow. But Franklin still had the option to appeal the whole thing, didn't they? What happened when they took it to the Maryland Court of Special Appeals?
They did appeal, yes. But the appellate court upheld the lower court's decision in 2012. They basically reinforced the finality of the default judgment.
Mm-hmm.
They stated very clearly that Franklin couldn't use an appeal as a backdoor attempt to litigate the liability issues they had waived by not responding initially. The appellate court essentially said, look, you had your chance to respond, you didn't take it, so you have to live with the consequences. The judgment stood.
This case just really hammers home the critical importance of procedural rules, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Let's dive into some of the specific legal principles that made the default judgment so decisive here. The sources mention Maryland Rule 2613G as being key. What does that rule tell us in this context?
Yeah, Maryland Rule 2613G is really the linchpin here.
Mm-hmm.
It essentially says that once a default judgment, the final decision is entered, the party who defaulted, frankly in this case, is barred from challenging the underlying liability in any post-judgment motions.
Okay.
They can argue about the specifics of the relief granted, like maybe the calculation of damages, but the basic question of whether they actually did what they were accused of, that's off the table. Done.
And the expert materials, particularly the ones for law students, also pointed out that Franklin's big mistake, procedurally, was not filing a motion to vacate the order of default under Maryland Rule 2613 CAR before the final judgment was entered. What's the difference there and why was that so critical?
Ah, that's a vital distinction for anyone studying or practicing law. So there are two stages.
Mm.
First, the court enters an order of default when a party fails to respond. That's
yeah.
like a preliminary finding. Rule 2613D provides a way for a party to ask the court to set aside that initial order of default before it hardens into a final judgment. If Franklin had acted quickly after realizing their mistake, filed that 2613D motion, they could have explained why they failed to respond, maybe a clerical error or whatever, and asked the court for permission to defend the lawsuit belatedly.
So they might have had a chance.
They might have, yeah. The court would consider the reason for the delay, whether they had a potentially meritorious defense, and whether setting aside the default would prejudice Neflin. But by waiting until after the final judgment was entered, Rule 2613G slammed the door shut on challenging liability. It was too late.
So acting quickly, really quickly, to correct a procedural misstep can literally be the difference between getting a chance to defend yourself and facing a six-figure judgment. Wow.
Precisely. Time is truly of the essence in these situations.
Another interesting aspect you mentioned is how Maryland law treats credit reporting as slander per se. Why is that significant in this specific case?
Well, it's significant because it dramatically lowered the bar for Neflin to prove defamation. Typically, in a defamation case, you have to show that the false statement caused you actual specific harm, lost a job, denied a loan, etc.
Right, prove the damages.
Exactly. But with slander per se, certain categories of false statements, and in Maryland, this includes statements that harm your creditworthiness or injure you in your profession, are considered so damaging on their face that harm is just presumed by the law.
Okay.
This meant Neflin didn't have to bring in specific evidence of how the negative credit report impacted him financially day to day. Once the default established the report was false, the defamation claim became much, much stronger, and Franklin's later arguments about their intent or lack of malice became totally irrelevant.
It's fascinating how these different areas of law just intersect here. You've got contract law with the breach settlement, tort law with the defamation claim, and then consumer protection law. How did the court see the connection between the breach of contract and the MCD CPA violations? Franklin argued breaching a settlement isn't debt collection.
Yeah, that was Franklin's argument, but the court didn't buy it. The court recognized that Franklin wasn't just some random party breaching a contract. They were a mortgage servicer.
Their whole business is debt.
Right. Their activities inherently involve debt collections, demanding payments, reporting delinquencies, managing escrow. Therefore, their actions in breaching the settlement agreement specifically by improperly charging those fees and failing to correct the credit reports were seen as falling under the umbrella of unfair or deceptive practices that the MCDCA and MCPA are designed to prevent.
So the context mattered.
Absolutely. The breach wasn't viewed in isolation. It was considered within the context of their ongoing debt collection activities with Neflin. It was part of a pattern.
This case really drives home some crucial lessons, particularly for our listeners who are law students or maybe just starting out. What are the key takeaways from Franklin v. Neflin that you think are most important for them to remember?
Okay, number one, absolutely the biggest takeaway. The paramount importance of adhering to procedural rules, especially the deadline to respond to a complaint. Ignoring a lawsuit is just not an option.
Mm-hmm.
The consequences, as we see here, can be severe and potentially outweigh the merits of any defense you might have had.
Right.
Secondly, understanding that procedural distinction we talked about, defaulting on an order versus a judgment and knowing the rules, like 2613, for vacating those defaults before final judgment is entered, that knowledge is absolutely critical for litigation practice.
Okay.
And finally, this case is a great illustration of how different legal doctrines, contract, tort, consumer protection, can converge in a single dispute. So having a broad understanding across different areas of law is really essential. You can't just stay in one silo.
It's such a stark reminder that in the legal profession, meticulous attention to detail and a real mastery of procedure are just as vital as knowing the substantive law itself.
Right.
You know, a missed deadline can be just as damaging, if not more so, than a weak legal argument.
Precisely. And as our source material aimed at law students emphasizes, allowing a default judgment like this to stand often raises, frankly, serious questions about the quality of legal representation involved. It underscores that fundamental duty lawyers have to respond diligently to legal process for their clients.
So Franklin v. Neflin really serves as a powerful, if sobering, cautionary tale. For you, our listener, especially if you're on your way to becoming a legal professional, remember this case. It truly highlights the potentially devastating financial repercussions of procedural missteps.
Mm-hmm.
And it underscores that crucial principle that a default acts as a powerful admission of liability in the eyes of the law.
That's exactly right. And maybe it leaves us with this final thought to ponder. Consider how these principles extend beyond just responding to a complaint. You know, and what other legal or maybe even non-legal scenarios might seemingly small procedural errors or missed deadlines have significant, maybe even irreversible consequences?
Good question.
And maybe thinking about how will you, in your future practice, ensure that you remain vigilant about these crucial details? And how will you effectively counsel your clients on why these seemingly technical rules are so incredibly important? It's a sobering, but I think essential lesson from the case of Franklin Credit Management Corp. Neflin.